The Great Chapter, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. Withhati Sariputta. So I've heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Varanasi in the deer park at Isipatana. Now at that time several senior mendicants, after the meal, on their return from alms round, sat together in the pavilion talking about the teachings. Venerable Chittahati Sariputta interrupted them while they were talking. Then Venerable Mahakatita said to Venerable Chittahati Sariputta, "Venerable, please don't interrupt the senior mendicants while they're talking about the teachings. Wait until the end of the discussion." When he said this, Chittahati Sariputta's companions said to Mahakatita, "Venerable, please don't rebuke Chittahati Sariputta. He is astute and quite capable of talking about the teachings with the senior mendicants." It's not easy to know this, reverence, for those who don't comprehend another's mind. Take a person who is the sweetest of the sweet, the most even-tempered of the even-tempered, the calmest of the calm. So long as they live relying on the teacher or a spiritual companion in a teacher's role. But when they're separated from the teacher or a spiritual companion in a teacher's role, they mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose an ox fond of crops was tied up or shut in a pen. Would it be right to say that that ox will never again invade the crops? No, it would not, Reverend. For it's quite possible that that ox will snap the ropes or break out of the pen and then invade the crops. In the same way, take a person who is the sweetest of the sweet. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Take the case of a person who, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, enters and remains in the first absorption, thinking, "I get the first absorption." They mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose it was raining heavily at the crossroads so that the dust vanished and mud appeared. Would it be right to say that now dust will never appear at this crossroad again? No, it would not, Reverend. For it is quite possible that people or cattle and so on will cross over the crossroad, or that the wind and sun will evaporate the moisture so that the dust appears again. In the same way, take the case of a person who, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, enters and remains in the first absorption, thinking, "I get the first absorption." As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Take another case of a person who, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, enters and remains in the second absorption, thinking, "I get the second absorption." They mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose there was a large pond not far from a town or village. After it rained heavily, there the clams and mussels and pebbles and gravel would vanish. Would it be right to say that now the clams and mussels and pebbles and gravel will never appear here again? No, it would not, Reverend, for it's quite possible that people or cattle and so on will drink from the pond, or that the wind and sun will evaporate it, so that the clams and mussels and pebbles and gravel appear again. In the same way, take another case of a person who, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, enters and remains in the second absorption, thinking, I get the second absorption. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Take the case of another person who, with a fading away of rapture, enters and remains in the third absorption, thinking, I get the third absorption. They mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose a person had finished a delicious meal. They'd have no appetite for leftovers. Would it be right to say that now food will never appeal to this person again? No, it would not, Reverend, for it's quite possible that other food won't appeal to that person as long as the nourishment is still present. But when the nourishment vanishes, food will appeal again. In the same way, take the case of a person who, with the fading away of rapture, enters and remains in the third absorption, thinking, I get the third absorption. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Take the case of another person who, giving up pleasure and pain, enters and remains in the fourth absorption, thinking, I get the fourth absorption. They mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose that in a mountain glen there was a lake, unruffled and free of waves. Would it be right to say that now waves will never appear in this lake again? No, it would not, Reverend. For it is quite possible that a violent storm could blow up out of the east, west, north or south, and stir up waves in that lake. In the same way, take the case of a person who, giving up pleasure and pain, enters and remains in the fourth absorption, thinking, I get the fourth absorption. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Take the case of another person who, not focusing on any signs, enters and remains in the signless immersion of the heart, thinking, I get the signless immersion of the heart. They mix closely with monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, with rulers and their ministers, and with monastics of other religions and their disciples. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Suppose a ruler or their minister, while walking along the road with an army of four divisions, was to arrive at a forest grove where they set up camp for the night. There, because of the noise of the elephants, horses, chariots, soldiers, and the drums, kettle drums, horns and cymbals, the chirping of crickets would vanish. Would it be right to say that now the chirping of crickets will never be heard in this woodland grove again? No, it would not, Reverend, for it is quite possible that the ruler or their minister will depart from that woodland grove, so that the chirping of crickets will be heard there again. In the same way, take the case of a person who, not focusing on any signs, enters and remains in the signless immersion of the heart. As they mix closely, they become intimate and loose, spending time chatting, and so lust infects their mind. They resign the training and return to a lesser life. Then, after some time, Venerable Cittahati Sariputta resigned the training and returned to a lesser life. Then the mendicants who were his companions went up to Venerable Mahakatita and said, "Did Venerable Mahakatita comprehend Cittahati Sariputta's mind and know that he had gained such and such meditative attainments, yet he would still resign the training and return to a lesser life? Or did deities tell you about it?" "Reverence, I comprehended his mind and knew this, and deities also told me." Then the mendicants who were Cittahati Sariputta's companions went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, Cittahati Sariputta, who had gained such and such meditative attainments, has still resigned the training and returned to a lesser life." "Mendicants, soon Citta will remember renunciation." And not long after, Cittahati Sariputta shaved off his head and beard, dressed in ochre robes, and went forth from the lay life to homelessness. Then Cittahati Sariputta, living alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute, soon realized the supreme culmination of the spiritual path in this very life. He lived, having achieved, with his own insight, the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. He understood. Rebirth is ended. The spiritual journey has been completed. What had to be done has been done. There is no return to any state of existence. And Venerable Cittahati Sariputta became one of the perfected. In the middle. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Varanasi in the deer park at Isipatana. Now at that time, after the meal, on return from alms round, several senior mendicants sat together in the pavilion, and this discussion came up among them. "Reverence, this was said by the Buddha in The Way to the Far Shore, in The Questions of Maitreya. The thoughtful one who has known both ends and is not stuck in the middle, he is a great man, I declare. He has escaped the seamstress here." "But what is one end? What is the second end? What's the middle? And who is the seamstress?" When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "Contact, reverence, is one end. The origin of contact is the second end. The cessation of contact is the middle. And craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another. That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life." When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "The past, reverence, is one end. The future is the second end. The present is the middle. And craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another. That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life." When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "Pleasant feeling, reverence, is one end. Painful feeling is the second end. Neutral feeling is the middle. And craving is the seamstress. For craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another. That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life." When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "Name, reverence, is one end, form is the second end, consciousness is the middle, and craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another." That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known, and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life. When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "The six interior sense fields, reverends, are one end. The six exterior sense fields are the second end. Consciousness is the middle. And craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another." That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known, and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life. When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "Identity, reverence, is one end. The origin of identity is the second end. The cessation of identity is the middle. And craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another." That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known, and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life. When this was said, one of the mendicants said to the senior mendicants, "Each of us has spoken from the heart. Come, reverence, let's go to the Buddha and inform him about this. As he answers, so we'll remember it." "Yes, reverend," those senior mendicants replied. Then those senior mendicants went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side, and informed the Buddha of all they had discussed. They asked, "Sir, who has spoken well?" "Mendicants, you've all spoken well, in a way. However, this is what I was referring to in the way to the far shore, in the questions of Metteya, when I said, the sage has known both ends, and is not stuck in the middle. He is a great man, I declare. He has escaped the seamstress here. Listen and apply your mind well, I will speak." "Yes, sir," they replied. The Buddha said this, "Contact, mendicants, is one end. The origin of contact is the second end. The cessation of contact is the middle. And craving is the seamstress, for craving weaves one to being reborn in one state of existence or another." That's how a mendicant directly knows what should be directly known, and completely understands what should be completely understood. Knowing and understanding thus, they make an end of suffering in this very life. Knowledge of the faculties of persons. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was wandering in the land of the Kosalans, together with a large sangha of mendicants, when he arrived at a town of the Kosalans named Dandakapaka. The Buddha left the road and sat at the root of a tree on the seat spread out. The mendicants entered Dandakapaka to look for a guest house. Then Venerable Ananda, together with several mendicants, went to the Acharavati River to bathe. When he had bathed and emerged from the water, he stood in one robe, drying himself. Then a certain mendicant went up to Venerable Ananda and said to him, "Reverend Ananda, when the Buddha declared that Devadatta was going to a place of loss, to hell, there to remain for an aeon, irredeemable, did he do so after wholeheartedly deliberating, or was this just a way of speaking?" "You're right, Reverend, that's how the Buddha declared it." Then Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and told him what had happened. "Ananda, that mendicant must be junior, recently gone forth, or else a foolish, incompetent senior mendicant. How on earth can he take something that I have declared definitively to be ambiguous? I do not see a single other person about whom I have given such wholehearted deliberation before making a declaration as I did in the case of Devadatta. As long as I saw even a fraction of a hair's tip of goodness in Devadatta, I did not declare that he was going to a place of loss, to hell, there to remain for an aeon, irredeemable. But when I saw that there was not even a fraction of a hair's tip of goodness in Devadatta, I declared that he was going to a place of loss, to hell, there to remain for an aeon, irredeemable. Suppose there was a sewer deeper than a man's height, full to the brim with feces, and someone was sunk into it over their head. Then along comes a person who wants to help make them safe, who wants to lift them out of that sewer. But circling all around the sewer, they couldn't see even a fraction of a hair's tip of that person that was not smeared with feces. In the same way, when I saw that there was not even a fraction of a hair's tip of goodness in Devadatta, I declared that he was going to a place of loss, to hell, there to remain for an aeon, irredeemable. Ananda, if only you would all listen to the realized one's analysis of the knowledges of the faculties of individuals. Now is the time, blessed one. Now is the time, holy one. Let the Buddha analyze the faculties of persons. The mendicants will listen and remember it. Well then, Ananda, listen and apply your mind well. I will speak. Yes, sir, Ananda replied. The Buddha said this. Ananda, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time I comprehend their mind and understand the skillful qualities of this person have vanished, but the unskillful qualities are still present. Nevertheless, their skillful root is unbroken, and from that the skillful will appear. So this person is not liable to decline in the future. Suppose some seeds were intact, unspoiled, not weather-damaged, fertile and well-kept. They're sown in a well-prepared, productive field. Wouldn't you know that those seeds would grow, increase and mature? Yes, sir. In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person is not liable to decline in the future. This is how another individual is known to the realized one, by comprehending their mind. And this is how the realized one knows a person's faculties, by comprehending their mind. And this is how the realized one knows the future origination of a person's qualities, by comprehending their mind. When I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time, I comprehend their mind and understand the unskillful qualities of this person have vanished, but the skillful qualities are still present. Nevertheless, their unskillful root is unbroken, and from that the unskillful will appear. So this person is still liable to decline in the future. Suppose some seeds were intact, unspoiled, not weather-damaged, fertile and well-kept, and they were sown on a broad rock. Wouldn't you know that those seeds would not grow, increase and mature? Yes, sir. In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person is still liable to decline in the future. This is how another individual is known to the realized one. When I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time, I comprehend their mind and understand this person has not even a fraction of a hair's tip of goodness. They have exclusively dark, unskillful qualities. When their body breaks up after death, they will be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Suppose some seeds were broken, spoiled, weather-damaged. They're sown in a well-prepared, productive field. Wouldn't you know that those seeds would not grow, increase, and mature?
Yes, sir.
In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person has not even a fraction of a hair's tip of goodness. They have exclusively dark, unskillful qualities. When their body breaks up after death, they will be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. When he said this, Venerable Ananda said to the Buddha, Sir, can you describe three other persons who are counterparts of these three?
I can, Ananda, said the Buddha.
Ananda, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time, I comprehend their mind and understand the skillful qualities of this person have vanished, but the unskillful qualities are still present. Nevertheless, their skillful root is unbroken, but it's about to be totally destroyed. So this person is still liable to decline in the future. Suppose that there were some burning coals, blazing and glowing, and they were placed on a broad rock. Wouldn't you know that those coals would not grow, increase, and spread?
Yes, sir.
Or suppose it was the late afternoon and the sun was going down. Wouldn't you know that the light was about to vanish and darkness appear?
Yes, sir.
Or suppose that it's nearly time for the midnight meal. Wouldn't you know that the light had vanished and the darkness appeared?
Yes, sir.
In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person is still liable to decline in the future. When I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time, I comprehend their mind and understand the unskillful qualities of this person have vanished, but the skillful qualities are still present. Nevertheless, their unskillful root is unbroken, but it's about to be totally destroyed. So this person is not liable to decline in the future. Suppose that there were some burning coals, blazing and glowing. They were placed on a pile of grass or timber. Wouldn't you know that those coals would grow, increase and spread?
Yes, sir.
Suppose it's the crack of dawn and the sun is rising. Wouldn't you know that the dark will vanish and the light appear?
Yes, sir.
Or suppose that it's nearly time for the midday meal, wouldn't you know that the dark had vanished and the light appeared?
Yes, sir.
In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person is not liable to decline in the future. When I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand both skillful and unskillful qualities are found in this person. After some time, I comprehend their mind and understand this person has not even a fraction of a hair's tip of unskillful qualities. They have exclusively bright, blameless qualities. They will become extinguished in this very life. Suppose that there were some cool, extinguished coals. They were placed on a pile of grass or timber. Wouldn't you know that those coals would not grow, increase, and spread?
Yes, sir.
In the same way, when I've comprehended the mind of a person, I understand this person has not even a fraction of a hair's tip of unskillful qualities. They have exclusively bright, blameless qualities. They will become extinguished in this very life. This is how another individual is known to the realized one by comprehending their mind. And this is how the realized one knows a person's faculties by comprehending their mind. And this is how the realized one knows the future origination of a person's qualities by comprehending their mind. And so, Ananda, of the first three people, one is not liable to decline, one is liable to decline, and one is bound for a place of loss, hell. And of the second three people, one is liable to decline, one is not liable to decline, and one is bound to become extinguished.
penetrative mendicants, I will teach you a penetrative exposition of the teaching. Listen and apply your mind well. I will speak. Yes, sir, they replied. The Buddha said this. Mendicants, what is the penetrative exposition of the teaching? Sensual pleasures should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. Feelings should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. Perceptions should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. Defilements should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. Deeds should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. Suffering should be known, and its source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to its cessation should be known. Sensual pleasures should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, but why did I say it? There are these five kinds of sensual stimulation. Sights known by the eye that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Sounds known by the ear that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Smells known by the nose that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Tastes known by the tongue that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Touches known by the body that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. However, these are not sensual pleasures. In the training of the Noble One, they're called kinds of sensual stimulation. Greedy intention is a person's sensual pleasure. The world's pretty things aren't sensual pleasures. Greedy intention is a person's sensual pleasure. The world's pretty things stay just as they are, but a wise one removes desire for them. And what is the source of sensual pleasure? Contact is their source. And what is the diversity of sensual pleasures? The sensual desire for sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches are all different. This is called the diversity of sensual pleasures. And what is the result of sensual pleasures? When one who desires sensual pleasures creates a corresponding life form with the attributes of either good or bad deeds, this is called the result of sensual pleasures. And what is the cessation of sensual pleasures? When contact ceases, sensual pleasures cease. The practice that leads to the cessation of sensual pleasures is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands sensual pleasures in this way, and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of sensual pleasures. Sensual pleasures should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. Feelings should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, but why did I say it? There are these three feelings, pleasant, painful, and neutral. And what is the source of feelings? Contact is their source. And what is the diversity of feelings? There are material pleasant feelings, spiritual pleasant feelings, material painful feelings, spiritual painful feelings, material neutral feelings, and spiritual neutral feelings. This is called the diversity of feelings. And what is the result of feelings? When one who feels creates a corresponding life form with the attributes of either good or bad deeds, this is called the result of feelings. And what is the cessation of feelings? When contact ceases, feelings cease. The practice that leads to the cessation of feelings is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands feelings in this way and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of feelings. Feelings should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. Perceptions should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, but why did I say it? There are these six perceptions, perceptions of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and thoughts. And what is the source of perceptions? Contact is their source. And what is the diversity of perceptions? The perceptions of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and thoughts are all different. This is called the diversity of perceptions. And what is the result of perceptions? Communication is the result of perception, I say. You communicate something in whatever manner you perceive it, saying, "That's what I perceived." This is called the result of perceptions. And what is the cessation of perception? When contact ceases, perception ceases. The practice that leads to the cessation of perceptions is simply this noble eightfold path. That is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands perception in this way and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of perception. Perceptions should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. Defilements should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said. But why did I say it? There are these three defilements, the defilements of sensuality, desire to be reborn, and ignorance. And what is the source of defilements? Ignorance is the source of defilements. And what is the diversity of defilements? There are defilements that lead to rebirth in hell, the animal realm, the ghost realm, the human world, and the world of the gods. This is called the diversity of defilements. And what is the result of defilements? When one who is ignorant creates a corresponding life form with the attributes of either good or bad deeds, this is called the result of defilements. And what is the cessation of defilements? When ignorance ceases, defilements cease. The practice that leads to the cessation of defilements is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands defilements in this way, and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they can understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of defilements. Defilements should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. Deeds should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, but why did I say it? It is intention that I call deeds, for after making a choice, one acts by way of body, speech, and mind. And what is the source of deeds? Contact is their source. And what is the diversity of deeds? There are deeds that lead to rebirth in hell, the animal realm, the ghost realm, the human world, and the world of the gods. This is called the diversity of deeds. And what is the result of deeds? The result of deeds is threefold, I say. In this very life, on rebirth in the next life, or at some later time. This is called the result of deeds. And what is the cessation of deeds? When contact ceases, deeds cease. The practice that leads to the cessation of deeds is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands deeds in this way, and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of deeds. Deeds should be known, and their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. Suffering should be known, and its source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to its cessation should be known. That's what I said, but why did I say it? Rebirth is suffering, old age is suffering, illness is suffering, death is suffering, sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and distress are suffering. Not getting what you wish for is suffering. In brief, the five grasping aggregates are suffering. And what is the source of suffering? Craving is the source of suffering. And what is the diversity of suffering? There is suffering that is severe, mild, slow to fade, and quick to fade. This is called the diversity of suffering. And what is the result of suffering? It's when someone who is overcome and overwhelmed by suffering, sorrows and wails and laments, beating their breast and falling into confusion, or else, overcome by that suffering, they begin an external search, wondering, who knows one or two phrases to stop this suffering? The result of suffering is either confusion or a search, I say. This is called the result of suffering. And what is the cessation of suffering? When craving ceases, suffering ceases. The practice that leads to the cessation of suffering is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. When a noble disciple understands suffering in this way and understands their source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation, they understand that this penetrative spiritual life is the cessation of suffering. Suffering should be known, and its source, diversity, result, cessation, and the practice that leads to its cessation should be known. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. This is the penetrative exposition of the teaching. The Lion's Roar. Mendicants, the realized one possesses six powers of a realized one. With these he claims the bull's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and turns the holy wheel. What six? Firstly, the realized one truly understands the possible as possible and the impossible as impossible. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Relying on this, he claims the bull's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and turns the holy wheel. Furthermore, the realized one truly understands the result of deeds undertaken in the past, future, and present in terms of causes and reasons. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Furthermore, the realized one truly understands corruption, cleansing, and emergence regarding the absorptions, liberations, immersions, and attainments. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Furthermore, the realized one recollects many kinds of past lives, that is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000 rebirths, many aeons of the world contracting, many aeons of the world expanding, many aeons of the world contracting and expanding. He remembers, there I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn somewhere else. There too I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn here. And so he recollects his many kinds of past lives with features and details. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Furthermore, with clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, the realized one sees sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. He understands how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Furthermore, the realized one has realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life. And he lives, having realized it, with his own insight due to the ending of defilements. Since he truly understands this, this is a power of the realized one. Relying on this, he claims the bull's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and turns the holy wheel. These are the six powers of a realized one that the realized one possesses. With these, he claims the bull's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and turns the holy wheel. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of the possible as possible and the impossible as impossible, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of the result of deeds undertaken in the past, future, and present in terms of causes and reasons, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of corruption, cleansing, and emergence regarding the absorptions, liberations, immersions, and attainments, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of recollection of past lives, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of passing away and rebirth of sentient beings, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. If others come to the realized one and ask questions about his true knowledge of the ending of defilements, the realized one answers them in whatever manner he has truly known it. And I say that true knowledge of the possible as possible and the impossible as impossible is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And true knowledge of the result of deeds undertaken in the past, future, and present in terms of causes and reasons is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And true knowledge of corruption, cleansing and emergence regarding the absorptions, liberations, immersions and attainments is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And true knowledge of the recollection of past lives is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And true knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of sentient beings is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And true knowledge of the ending of defilements is for those with immersion, not for those without immersion. And so, mendicants, immersion is the path. No immersion is the wrong path.